I'm not pulling out of my driveway. We all know what that means. It's time for the Drive to Work Coronavirus Edition. Okay, guys, I've been having so much fun talking with R&D folks, new and old, about sets we worked on together. Today is R&D old. It's Tyler Bielman is with me to talk about Original Mirrodin. Hey, Tyler.
Hey, Mark. It's so great to see you. I'm so happy to be with you today.
Okay, so let me, for the audience, I'm well-versed in who you are, but the audience might not be. So Tyler started doing freelance work for Wizards, doing marketing and advertising.
That's right, yep.
Joined and on the brand team for a while.
Yep.
And then you came over to R&D, you ran the creative team, and did a lot of, you were on the design team for Mirrodin, which is why we're talking about this today. Although you also did a lot of the creative too. So you have a larger role in Mirrodin.
Yeah. I was at that point in time, I was sort of the creative director was the title, and I ran the creative team, and I hadn't done much game design actually at all. It was an incredible opportunity to start learning how to make games with this incredible team. So yeah, it was amazing.
Okay, so part of the fun of the Mirrodin story, and just so the audience knows, like Tyler and I have not talked about this ahead of time, so I'm going to jump in and we'll see what Tyler remembers of this. Okay, so you and I had grandiose plans for Mirrodin long before we made Mirrodin. How much memory do you have of our original ideas on what Mirrodin was going to be?
I remember the first thing I remember is knowing it was going to be an artifact block. And then I remember coming out of my office and going to Brady's desk and saying, what if the whole world was made of metal? And that's what I remember as being a kickoff of the whole thing. And that's my first recollection of it. Now, I'm sure we must have talked subsequent to that or before that about something else, but that's what I remember very vividly.
Okay, so I'm going to tell you a story, the thing that we had planned, see if this comes back to you.
Okay.
You and I planned a 3-year story arc in which the first year was Mirrodin as we knew it. It was a metal world that was made, made the metal world.
Yeah.
The second year was a prison world.
A prison world.
Right. Yes. Where people were fighting, the warder made them fight for stuff. And the third year was a fight between the two worlds that had each had their own system to get the best fighters so they could bring it to this big conflict.
That's right. I do remember that. I think that was subsequent to the conversation I would have had with Brady. But yeah, we definitely had, I remember the prison world discussions at length, which I'm assuming, you know, we never did anything with. But
One day, we've not made a prison world yet, but it's come up a bunch of times.
Yeah, I remember in my head, it was like a lava world. Like it was going to be a lava world. Was the prison world, but maybe I'm misremembering, but that's what I remember.
My memory of it was underground, but that lava world and underground prison world don't negate one another.
That was going to be a part of it. Yeah, gosh, that's amazing. I haven't thought about that since then. That's amazing.
Okay, so another thing that you and I talked about is completely revamping artifacts. So you remember this? So the idea we had was we were going to break artifacts up into, I think it was 5 categories to give more definition to artifacts. Does this ring a bell? Scrolls.
Yeah. I remember that initial conversation, and then that, of course, becoming equipment.
Right, like, weapons.
Local artifacts.
Weapons. Yeah. One of them was one of them were weapons. One was, I don't know, armor or something. One was scrolls. Armor, yeah. One was potions. And one was like miscellaneous, I think.
Yeah. And I mean, that was, I mean, obviously, right, the fantasy influence there coming in. And it's funny to think of Mirrodin as being closer to high fantasy than a lot of magic because it's this very interesting world made of metal. But if you look at what we ended up doing with equipment and the magic wand, right, the Isochron scepter and what we did with the race class system, like it's very classic fantasy stuff that's starting to seep its way in, even though that world is a very magic style, mage punk, magic world.
So the interesting thing is, nowadays, we have, like, the creative team and the design team are very interwoven, but Mirrodin was one of the really first sets where that really happened.
Yeah.
We went to Brady and said, you know, it's a metal world, right? That was your big pitch that I was very enamored with was, okay, everything's made of metal. What does that mean?
What does it mean? Yeah.
Yeah. And I know Jeremy Cranford, who was the art director at the time, had this idea of weaving metal through the biology of creatures.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like the idea that they eventually came up with, which wasn't quite where we started, was that the creatures had been pulled here from elsewhere, which I think was part of our original pitch, but that when they were pulled here, they weren't metal yet, but the act of being there, like this environment slowly made them metal over time.
Infected them, yeah. It would infect them with the kind of liquid metal kind of idea. I remember that as well. And then, yeah, and then the reveal at the third, the, like you said, there was the metal world, and then there was sort of the prison world. And we, I think you and I both were big fans of Secret Wars from Marvel, right?
So oh, yeah, for
you
sure.
You can see the influence there. for, you know, in this. So I think the idea was then the big reveal in the third act was, oh my gosh, they, you know, this is one connected idea that these people, you know, whether they were taken to the prison world or taken to the metal world.
Right.
There were two, there were these Uber, yeah, it's all coming back now. There were some Uber entities who were essentially playing a big game with these two worlds.
Right. And the idea I think was that each one of them was trying to get the best combatants they could.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's just two different strategies for how to get the best combatants that you could.
Which is just magic, right? At the end, like, it's, it was just magic. We just took this, we just would, like, pulled up to a cosmic scope of the two players. Oh, my gosh, yeah. I remember all of that, yeah.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about equipment. We had picked, so one of the grandiose ideas that you and I had, and we spent a lot of time on this, was could we, one of the things that's always been a thing is enchantments and artifacts overlap a lot. Like, they're creatively very different, but mechanically they're really not that different. And we were trying to figure out how to separate them a little more, and we were like... but one of the things we talked about was weapons, and that one of the things that magic was kind of missing was, hey, I had these creatures, but I couldn't give them a weapon.
Yeah, where's my flaming sword?
Right. Right.
That's, that, like seems like that's a thing we should be doing.
I mean, now, the way it worked is you the planeswalker could have a flaming sword, but your creatures couldn't have sword. I mean, we had tried a little bit. Early magic has some artifacts that you could tap and not untap, and it was trying to mimic the idea that they had it.
Yeah, creating a little narrative connection there, but you had to squint your eyes at it to tell the story, right?
So what is your earliest memory of equipment?
I remember coming out of we were in a design meeting. With that incredible team. I don't remember who said it, but I remember that someone said, you know, we came up with the idea of, I remember local artifacts, right? That was the two-word thing that came out of the conversation. So then I remember I got up, I was very excited. And so I went over to the organized play team and I basically busted in on a meeting and I said, tell me why local artifacts wouldn't work, right? I said, is there anything I'm not seeing as to why it wouldn't work conceptually? And they all, you know, looked at each other and we had a brief conversation. No, it was fine. And I basically just did that in a few different places, right? There were those touchstone people. You'd go to customer service and talk to them a little bit, go to organized play and talk to them a little bit. And that's my initial recognition of it. I don't know from there, I don't remember the process of how it ended up mechanically, you know, tap to attach and that kind of stuff, but, or the
right,
cost
so,
to attach.
So here's my memory. The very first thing we tried was we just did equipment as if it was an aura, but it was an artifact.
Yeah.
That was the first, literally, it said equip, but it acted exactly like an aura, just it was an artifact and not an enchantment.
Yeah.
And the feedback we got was, we have auras, why
right.
Like, if your whole goal is to make artifacts and equipment, artifacts and enchantments different, why completely mimic what enchantments
right.
are doing?
That's right.
And then somebody...
The popping off thing, right?
Right.
The
somebody said, well, what if... Like, if someone loses a sword, the argument was, if I give a goblin a sword and you kill the goblin, well, the sword's not gone. Someone else can pick up the sword.
Yeah.
And we followed the flavors, kind of how we got there.
Yeah. Well, the whole thing was flavor-driven, right? It was
right.
a sort of high-concept, top-down idea. I remember vaguely playtesting that and the popping off being... the next step in that process.
Right. It was the second thing we tried and we really stuck with it. And the big question was, how do you get it on the creature? Like, I think the big innovation we came up with was that you didn't put it on the creature right away, that you just played it. And then there was a cost to get it from the play to the creature.
Yeah. For the goblin to pick it up.
Right. Ironically, we do a lot of snap on equipment these days where it snaps on automatically. But one of the things was to try to give it its own identity was it's not an aura. Look, you cast it like you cast any artifact. Oh, but it has a special quality that you can attach it to something or equip it, as we ended up calling it. I will say, by the way, so there's four new things in the set as far as named things, which was equipment, Affinity, Imprint, and Atwine. We're going to talk about all of these. One of the things I'm very proud of is the design team named all of them, and all of the names stuck. So,
oh, really?
Well, yeah.
I do not remember that being the case.
Yes.
That's really funny.
Yeah.
Well, you had Brian Tinsman and I both in there, right? And at that point, I don't know how much naming I had
so, been doing. So, real quickly, just because you're mentioning the team. The team was me and Brian Tinsman and Mike Elliott and Tyler, and then Bill Rose was involved some.
Yeah, I mean, just a murderer's row of a team.
Yeah.
Like for me coming into Magic Design, it was amazing to work with that team.
Right. It was at the time, Mike and Brian and Bill and me were like leading 90% of the sets at the time. So it was all the set leads. So one thing I didn't mention, by the way, you sort of mentioned this real quick, is we had got into the idea that we wanted to have blocks that were themes. Invasion kind of started this.
Oh, yeah.
Blocks have themes. And I really, really wanted to do an artifact theme. So, I had tagged this block as being artifact super early, but that's all we knew about it. And then you were it's a world made of metal. And then, we went down that path of how do we make an artifact world feel like an artifact world?
Yeah, I mean, you and I had done some really great work on the color pie, right, on the color wheel, and, what does it all mean? And so it was really interesting to then think about the artifact side of that and how does it all fit in? And if you do this world, what does it mean for green? And all these cool sort of ideas that you and I were playing around with. And I think that set really holds up as something that creatively, thematically and mechanically is just really nicely intertwined.
Yeah. I think Mirrodin's fatal flaw was its development could have spent a little more time, but,
I don't want to say I washed my hands with that, but that was never really my department.
Design, I was super proud of Mirrodin. I think Mirrodin is, there are certain sets that definitely sort of put a flag in the ground and very much define things. And I think Mirrodin is definitely one of those sets. It really spoke to the players. I mean, it's a world we've gone back to multiple times, which usually is a sign.
Every time I see an announcement like that, I'm very proud of the Ravnica or Mirrodin, right? Because I was involved with both. That it has that persistence and that it has the legs, because it was such a great high concept that you could then keep building on the foundations.
So let's talk about the other mechanics here. Affinity. What is your memory of affinity for artifacts?
I honestly don't have much memory at all about it. I don't think it was, that was just, mechanics like affinity just weren't my area, right? The sort of those sort of mana oriented spike cards that, just they leveraged efficiency and you could create edge with, it just wasn't really my cup of tea, right? I was much more in the imprint and the equipment side of things.
So one of the things that we had, I really wanted this to be in what we call artifacts matter, meaning that part of metal world was, there's lots of artifacts. Why is it a metal world? Because there's so many artifacts. That's part of where metal world came from. That part of the thing that I felt was important was I wanted an artifact block where, man, there were a lot of artifacts. Another interesting thing as we get into Affinity is I actually put a lot more colored mana in the set. Do you remember this? I was a big believer that we needed to have a lot more color. So we had a lot more color activations and stuff.
Yeah.
And then Bill stripped most of it out when it went to development.
I remember that. Yeah, you're right. You had really good reasons for why to do that, because we didn't want the set to be a colorless set, but we wanted, as you said, artifacts to matter, right? And that made a lot of sense at the time.
Yeah. So it's funny. I mean, I think that one decision in retrospect, as far as part of the problem of the development that happened, was, I think I, in my head, had this idea that we need to separate the things so every deck can't play everything.
Yeah.
And then I think Bill was just like, it's an artifact set. Let's stop making it a color set. It's an artifact set. Let people play with the cards. And I think that, I mean, there are multiple things going on. But I think that, I think I sort of, in the deep of my heart, I knew there was something we needed to do. And then I just didn't fight for it enough. In retrospect, I wish I had fought for that a little more. Anyway, so Affinity came about because we wanted artifacts to matter, and it's like, okay, well, how can I care that you have a lot of artifacts? Mm-hmm. And cost reduction is just something that is, a sexy thing.
Dangerous.
Well, I mean, yes, it's terribly dangerous, but it's sexy. It's sexy and exciting.
Yeah, exactly.
And also because artifacts were generic mana, like affinity for artifacts means it could be free, right? It had this like allure of seduction. Ooh, it could be free.
Johnny loves it. Can I get there?
And so we stuck that in. So you mentioned Imprint. What is your early memory of Imprint?
I just remember very adamantly wanting a magic wand, right? And just trying to figure out how to do that. And then that became Isochron Scepter. And I remember just being so enamored of the idea of being able to put a spell into a wand and being able to cast it, having your wand of fireball or your wand of lightning bolt or whatever. And I remember, and that's the dominant memory I have of it.
Yeah, so
the metaphor.
Here's my memory. I mean, this is all intertwined. Is I tried to make what ended up being called Soul Shaper. I made a card that I called Clone Machine.
Yeah, do you remember when you call it that? I do remember.
Right. So you put a creature in, and then it made copies of this creature.
Yeah.
Soul Foundry. It's called Soul Foundry.
Soul Foundry. Yeah.
And Brian had made a card. It was an equipment, or not equipment, but it was a thing that when you hit your opponent, you put a spell in it. And both of those were ideas we didn't end up doing, but I liked them. And then when you talked about the magic wand, it was like the light bulb. I'm like, I saw the light of all these different things we had tried to do and said, it really, I loved the idea of what if choosing a card was a mechanic? What if we had, and you, like I said, I had made something, you had made something, Brian had made something, and it's just like the stars aligned and like, this could be a mechanic. But it was many years in the making. I mean, you were trying to make the wand in the set, but the stuff that Brian and I made were in previous sets, but we had never actually printed. And so what had happened was, I think you had pitched an idea, and then I'm like, and you didn't pitch it as a mechanic. You pitched it as a singular one-card idea. But I recognized that we kept trying to do it. And then I was like, oh, why make this one card? This could be a whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's design, right? You are making those as the lead designer, right? You're making these connections all the time, right? You've got this vast repository of ideas. And I've watched you do it, where you pluck out of the ether these ideas from the past and string them together to create a holistic new thing. It's an incredible process to be part of. So yeah, it was great.
And Imprint, I personally really like Imprint, although it's funny, we've learned that they're hard to make. That there's Imprint's the kind of mechanic that you can make a bunch of a few really cool things, and then it starts getting hard without making pick a spell and choose its color or something. It's like you could just pick the color, so that's not particularly interesting. Let's move on. Entwine. This has a famous story, which I don't know if you know the answer to, but
I probably don't. I remember a lot of conversations about kicker is everything. Why is kicker everything? That's what I remember. Lots of conversations about that, and then that I think that might have also bled into Darksteel's design too. Just trying to figure out how to bifurcate kicker in interesting ways.
Okay, so I'll bring something else up and see if you remember, and then I'll tell the story. Yeah. Do you remember energy? Because an early form of energy was in the set.
No, it doesn't ring a bell, Mark. It really doesn't.
And the way we did it in this set is we had charge counters on artifacts.
Yeah.
And we made artifacts that could remove charge counters from any artifact you had.
Right.
So it's like the idea was take serrated arrows, but imagine if you had another artifact that did something different and they shared the counters.
They shared the counters. Yep, I remember that now. Yep.
And that's not that far from energy. Energy, you, the player, keep them. But, I mean, it's a very similar thing, which is I have so many uses and I can use it in different places. Yeah. So Bill Rose stripped it out. He thought we had too much going on. So he took out the color stuff, or he lessened. There was some color stuff. He lessened the color stuff and he took out energy. And we were missing a spell mechanic. So what he said basically is, take this out, but we are missing something. Try to find a spell mechanic. Mm-hmm. And so I made a list of all the things we needed that would fit the role of what we were missing. Mm-hmm. And I went to sleep one night and I literally dreamed it up. Like I literally woke from a dream and wrote it down. It's
the best.
It's the one mechanic that I basically know that I dreamed up because I was I preloaded my brain and then I went to sleep and my brain's like, okay, here
you
go. That's
the best. When your brain comes through in clutch, that's fantastic. Yeah, I find my early mornings when I'm just in that dream zone, and I have some great ideas, and I've had game designs come to me, in that state. I love it.
Okay, next up, do you remember anything about Artifact Lands?
No. I don't even remember them being in the design set. I have no recollection of it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure these were my baby. I think what happened was we made Affinity, or not made Affinity, sorry. We made Artifact Matters. There's just infinite ways that artifacts matter.
Yeah.
And it dawned on me that, well, in this environment, people are going to be running Shatters left and right, because it's running artifact destruction. And like, oh, well, that would be a negative, that would be a cool balance on a land because, hey, you could cards an artifact with things that cared about it, but it'd be way more susceptible to people getting rid of it. And in my head, I'm like, oh, that seems equally balanced. What could go wrong? That sounds good. And I remember in early development, here's where I'll take the blame for this one. I think Randy Bueller, who led the team, said, these are a little bit dangerous. And I said, oh, but Randy, I know there's dangerous things you can do with them, but they're so much fun. There's all these cool things you can do with them.
Yeah.
And I said, please, if you can, try to keep them.
Yeah. I seem to remember that when you say it with that phrasing, I seem to remember you saying exactly those words.
So what else? Here's a question. We're walking through the mechanics. What else do you remember? Like when you, what are your design memories of making Mirrodin?
Yeah, the big one for me is the sort of race class or species class system that with the card types, with the creature types, that I believe that, we on the creative team, especially Brandon Bozzi, had, been wanting to make this move to allow us to kind of go again, much like fantasy RPGs, right, or D&D, it's an elf warrior or it's a goblin mystic or what have you. And so my recollection is that we did a PowerPoint presentation to the bunch of R&D key folks and, made the argument essentially that we thought that this would be a productive thing for Magic to do because it unlocked a lot more tribal stuff and there was a lot more things you could do with it. So I remember that being, it was kind of a feather in our cap on the creative side to kind of be able to contribute in that way.
Right. Here's my memory of that. Yeah. So your team had put that together.
Yeah.
So Brady Dommermuth came and talked to me because he knew I had been trying to make multiple creature types forever. And so he knew I was like the most receptive one in R&D. So he came to me individually and pitched it to me. And I said, well, you had me at like two creature types on a card, Brady. And then I helped with the presentation with you guys to pitch it to R&D just because you all felt that if it didn't just come from the creative team, if you had some buy-in, that it would help sort of convince the other people in R&D. I mean, it was clearly the creative team was the one that came up with it. But I was an early,
early adopter,
early champion.
You were a champion. I mean, that's in any organization, you have to have those champions that believe in what you're doing, and you were definitely that. I mean, your ability to balance the kind of the creative side of things with the mechanical side of things, and then your innate design sense and you've got a lot of different skill sets, right? So it was great to have you for that. Yeah. And then, I just remember also being excited about, this might sound silly, but just the stuff we could reprint, right? Like the idea of ATOG and then making the mega ATOG and Icy Manipulator, which was a card that I had loved for a long time. So it was just such a cool opportunity to kind of pull from the past too. I remember being, really happy with that.
Okay. So this something came up in another podcast, but you brought up adding the race class. Mm-hmm. So there's an interesting, I'm curious to get your take on this story because I talked about it with somebody else in a recent podcast. So when we did race class, before that, we never called out humans on cards. Just,
that's right.
If you were a human soldier, we just said soldier.
Soldier.
Right? Mm-hmm. But in the race class system required, okay, now if you're a human, we have to say you're human. And so it required the introduction of the human creature type, which was controversial at the time. So what is your memory of this?
Yeah, I mean, it brings up all the questions about are they human? Is it humanity? Why is it so earth focused? Do we have to make up a, you know, do we have to make up something that means man or human? And yeah, I remember lots of discussions around that. And then ultimately my recollection is just landing on, it's the thing that everybody knows. Everybody will understand it. No, we're thinking about this too hard. Nobody's going to hitch on this is my recollection.
Yeah. This is my memory of you. See, if you remember this, is we were in a meeting and everybody, we got people to buy on to the race class, but the sticking point was humans.
Yeah.
And so there's this conversation of, okay, we don't have to call them human, but, and we talk about other options. And you were in the meeting and you at one point goes, look, guys, we can name it something else, but it's what the, like, why are we going to choose a word? And then everybody playing the game is just going to call it human. Like, why are we doing that? And you made this a passion plea. And I always attributed that to,
that sounds about right. Yeah.
But I just remember I called it the human plea. It's like, you're like, and you made this great argument, which is we could call whatever we want and then everybody in the game is just going to call it human. Why are we fighting that?
That's kind of absurdly practical coming from me, actually. That's pretty funny. That's not usually my bailiwick. But yeah, that seems like a reasonable argument now in hindsight.
So, and we got it. And it's funny, the concession we made at the time, I had a podcast with Tom LaPillar where we talked about human tribal for the first time. It showed up in Innistrad and Dark Ascension. We had promised at the time we wouldn't do any human tribal. That was our concession to R&D when we got them to agree to put human was, okay, we won't make human matter. It'll just be a thing.
Oh yeah, we'll never do human matter.
We'll never make it matter. So,
yeah. Little, of course, yeah. Well, you're going to do everything.
Well, okay, so we're not too far. I'm not too far from my desk here. So what other, any other memories of Mirrodin?
No, I mean, just honestly, it was, the one thing, okay, so let's go back to the first day. And you may not remember this, but maybe not. You had, you know, I had not done this before. I had dabbed my toe into game design at all at that point. And you put out the call for commons for the set. And you said, you know, I'm looking for commons, just for ideas. Let's commons. And I did the thing that any, you know, I was and am just a huge Magic fan. And so I had my, you know, Word doc that I've been putting cards into for years. And I just sent you the whole thing. And so I remember we were at a Starbucks, I think, and you had a physical printout on paper when you used to use paper. And you said, okay, I've got your cards here. It's really great. They're not commons, but there's some interesting ideas here. And I remember at the time, like, just sort of being like, okay, that's good, but I just didn't have any clue, right, about what was going to happen. And as I learned through the design process about the slots and about the balance and about, you know, what makes a common, what a common needs to do in the set, and just that learning curve was so great. And you know, those initial steps with Mirrodin set the table for my whole career, because that transition into game design is what I do today. I do it in a different medium, but I hearken back to those initial lessons and the things I learned working with people like yourself. You know, literally at least once a week, I'm like going back and like trying to communicate to people some of the insights that we had at Wizards R&D, because it's a really special time. And it's a really incredible process.
Yeah. One of the things that to me is really interesting is that I find Wizards R&D has been a good sort of breeding ground for just designers. That there's infinite designers out there in the multiverse of game design that, you know, at some point passed through Magic. And so that's definitely very cool.
Yeah. And for years, I've told people who come to me, how do I get into design? What do I need to do to learn it? I point them at your podcast. I point them at, you know, Wizards R&D resources that are out there, because it really is it's so funny because I don't think it was designed to be this way. I think it built itself up organically, but you have to learn how to make a system like Magic. But to do that, and the incredible number of smart, brilliant people that went through that and honed that process. So I think it's an incredible starting point. And for me, it changed my life, because I went from, you know, marketing and then into the creative role and then became a game designer and have been that ever since.
Well, I will say one of the things that I've been enjoying about this whole series I'm doing is getting to talk with people that you and I haven't talked in a while. So it's fun reminiscing.
Absolutely. I appreciate it so much. Thank you, Mark. I had a blast.
And now I leave with the desire to, who can we do Prison World?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, what have we unleashed?
But
just remember that there's always a plan behind the plan.
Well, the other thing that's great, the other thing that's really fun, hopefully for the audience when we go back, is there's things that, like, we didn't do, but you later see us doing, like for example, energy we tried, and then energy, you know, Kaladesh years later ended up seeing fruition. And it's kind of funny how, when you go back, you can see the seeds of things to come, even though they might not even have been used then. So, yeah. That's always fun.
It's an amazing drink.
But anyway, I am at my desk, so we all know what that means. This is the end of my drive to work. So instead of talking magic, it's time for me to be making magic. So thank you so much for being on the show, Tyler.
Mark, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much. Good to see you, buddy.
Okay, guys, and I will see all of you next time. Bye-bye.